Welcome to Veterans Chronicles. I'm Greg Corumbus. Our guest in this edition is Donald Banks. He is a veteran of the U.S. Army's 82nd Airborne Division in World War II, serving with the Field Artillery Paratroopers. He is a recipient of the Purple Heart. And Mr. Banks, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
When and where were you born, sir?
Born in Lawrencetown, Nova Scotia, in 1925, May 16th.
You were born in Canada, so this might be a different type of question. Was there a history of military service in your family, either in the U.S. or Canada or anywhere else?
My brother.
And did he serve in World War II as well?
Yes.
And what branch of service was he in?
He was a medic in the Army.
Were you drafted or did you enlist?
I enlisted through the draft board. When I wanted to go in, but all the enlistment offices were closed because they were drafting. So I volunteered in the draft board.
And so did you choose the airborne or did the airborne choose you?
No, airborne was strictly voluntary, the whole thing.
Pretty tough training from what I've read. So what was it like for you?
Tough. It was a 9-mile run was normal.
Were you ready for that type of training when you first got there?
Well, yes, because I had been working at carpenter work with my father for a couple of years off and on, so I was in pretty good shape.
Now, when most people think of paratroopers, they think of jumping out of planes and ready to fight once they hit the ground. They might not imagine field artillery, so explain what paratroopers and field artillery do together.
I knew that would throw you. I don't know myself, to be honest with you, because obviously you can't jump with a howitzer under your arm. So we jumped in, and then part of our, the 82nd was what we call straight legs. They were glider riders, and they brought the guns in by glider or by truck.
And what kind of guns were they?
75 millimeters.
What was the training like to get good at shooting those?
Well, I trained on 105s in Fort Bragg, North Carolina, when I first went into the service.
And so if you could handle the 105s, you could handle the 75s, right?
Yes. I finished 17 weeks of basic training, and then they shipped us over.
Where did they ship you to?
Let's see, we landed in Scotland. Then they sent us on the train down to Wales. And we went into Wales in a what we called a repo depot, which was a replacement depot. And that's where they came and they were recruiting the paratroopers. And I signed up for the paratroopers there. And then they shipped us to England. I took my training in England for paratrooper school.
And what was that training like?
Well, it was real rough training. When they shook us out of our bunks, we did a run. We ran for 3 miles. Then we come back and we had our breakfast, and then we did the calisthenics. And a good part of the day was spent on strictly calisthenics. Then every once in a while we would go on a run. So it was tough training. I remember after the third day of it, I couldn't get out of bed in the morning, and neither could my buddy. And we were so lame and stiff from exercise. So then they had to help us out of bed, but we went right back to the training. There was no let up.
What kind of calisthenics did they have you doing that had you so sore?
Oh boy, you name it. Push-ups, duck walk, every kind of exercise you can imagine. The duck walk used to be the toughest one.
Did they let you jump once in a while?
No, we didn't jump until we finished all our calisthenics. And then we went to what we referred to as jump school. Jump school, you learn to about your parachute and how to use it, and so forth and so on, and then how to land and what we call tumble, and you learn how to tumble so you didn't hurt yourself, and also if there was a breeze blowing, how to collapse your chute after you're on the ground.
What was it like that first time you got to jump?
First time we got to jump, we were all so mad at our instructors because they were so rough on us. They really showed you no mercy, believe me. And so it wasn't tough at all because we were so anxious to get away from the instructors that we went out the door without even a second thought. However, after we got out the door, we were wondering what the hell we were doing out there.
So landing, how was that something you got pretty quickly because of the training that you had, or was that a learned skill?
Well, it was all different conditions that we landed in. You know, the wind was blowing or the wind was not blowing. It was water conditions, trees conditions, things like that. And we learned how to avoid trees and water, and if we could, or if we couldn't, then how we were going to land in them.
When were you finally deployed to fight?
D-Day.
Well, tell me about that. How did that start? How did that day start for you?
Oh, I'm hesitant to talk much about that at all, to be honest with you. It's too gruesome. I'd rather avoid that.
Well, can you tell me what your overall mission was that day?
Yeah, to take St. Mary Glise, first French town that was liberated.
And so can you tell me about the jump?
No, I don't want to talk about that either.
Where were you at the end of the day?
Someplace in Normandy. I don't know where.
Did you go back to England after that? Did you move forward? Where did you go after D-Day?
Paratroopers had what we called a mission, and after we finished the mission, we usually went back to base camp, and base camp was, at that point, was in England. And our mission, when we went into Normandy, was to take Cherbourg, and which was a considerable distance away from Normandy. And when we took that, then we were relieved. And the biggest thing I remember about that was that we had fought our way all the way to Cherbourg, and then I forget how many miles it was, but I remember we had to walk back to Normandy to get the ships to take us back to England. And I remember walking day and night. That was, I don't know which was worse, going or coming.
After you walked back from Cherbourg to Normandy, what happened next?
Well, they took us back on LSTs. They took us back to England, and then we got re-equipped in England and waited for the next mission, which happened to be, if my memory serves me right, I believe it was Holland.
So Operation Market Garden?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Tell me about getting ready for that. How did you prepare for that mission?
I didn't jump into that mission. We went in by truck. About half our division jumped in, and the other half went in by truck.
And where along that series of bridges did you drive to?
Nijmegen. Our mission was to take the bridge in Nijmegen, which the bridge went from Nijmegen to Germany.
And what did you discover once you got to Nijmegen? What was the situation there?
Well, it was held by the Germans, so we had to take it. And then we had to take the bridge. The Germans were going to blow up all the bridges that went across the river there. And we had to stop them from blowing them because we knew that Patton would need them taking his tanks over.
So what was the key to stopping them at Nijmegen? How were you successful there?
Just fight like hell.
How would you describe the German as a fighter?
He was a good fighter. He had an excellent howitzer, the 88, And they used the same gun for all their howitzer work, anti-aircraft, so forth. It was all the same gun, the 88, which was an excellent gun.
So how did you get around that? How were you able to succeed despite how effective they were with the 88s?
Well, perseverance, I guess.
Was there any particular strategy, how troops were moved around or how you, I assume you were shooting your 75s at them, right?
By that time, we had 105s in back of us, so.
And so was it a matter of greater firepower eventually?
Well, I guess it always comes down to that in the final phase of it.
And so what did you do after the battle at Nijmegen?
Well, then we were relieved, only we didn't go back to England then. We went to, my memory serves me right, we went back to Reims, France, where we again got re-equipped and waited for our next mission, and I really can't remember what was next.
Now, you were successful in holding the bridge at Nijmegen, but ultimately that mission became known as the Bridge Too Far because the Allies did not take the bridge at Arnhem across the Rhine. What was your reaction to knowing that ultimately the effort to cross the Rhine had not been successful that time?
That bridge over Arnhem was the English were supposed to take it, but they had impossible odds. There was no way they ever could have taken it.
And so you mentioned that you went for recovery to Reims. Was your next engagement at the Battle of the Bulge?
I'm not sure. Battle of the Bulge came along there someplace, yes, but I don't think that it was quite at that time. I'm really not sure.
Did you fight at the Battle of the Bulge?
Yes.
And what do you remember about that?
Up to your backside, and bitter cold.
Yeah, how did you deal with the cold? It's, the temperatures and the wind were just unreasonable.
Yeah, we had to rush up to the bulge when they broke through, and we went without any overcoats or gloves, so forth. We didn't have a mission to us until long after we got there. However, we had shelter hats and blankets and so forth. So we fashioned them into the craziest looking overcoat you ever saw. We cut holes in the top of it to put our arms through, and we cut holes in the bottom to put our legs through. And we used to laugh at like hell at each other. We looked like baggy panted Arabs. However, they were effective.
Do you still suffer any frostbite or other effects from being there?
Oh, yeah. My ears, I have to be very careful now with my ears. They got frozen about 6 times up there.
Where was your unit? Where was the 82nd along the line at the Bulge?
We moved around so much, I don't know.
And what do you remember about the combat there?
Well, it was tree to tree, if I remember. It was more like, I guess, what the old-fashioned Indian fighting.
You mentioned moving around a lot. How quickly could you pick up those guns and move them around?
We only had the 75s at that point, and they were very versatile. We, a half a dozen guys could pick up one of them, put them in the back of the truck if they had problems, or they towed them with jeeps and so forth. There wasn't much problem with the guns.
And obviously that was Hitler's big attempt to redefine the Western Front. So what was your reaction when the battle was over and you had held the line and he had failed?
Our reaction was same as any of the actions after we took a fight. We won our fight and we just quietly went to the next battle.
I know that you, as we said at the beginning, you received a Purple Heart. Do you remember where you were wounded and how that happened?
Yes, I was wounded in Holland in a little town of Groesbeck, I believe it was. I was wounded in the right elbow and the hand, and they sent me back to eventually I wound up back in Oxford, England, where I got healed, and they sent me back to combat after I was healed. And I know I was laid up for quite a while, but I don't remember how long.
Where were you when the war ended?
I don't know. I remember it ending. Seems to me we were back in France resting or something. I can't really. We were back in France or Belgium. I can't remember just which one.
Was there a pretty big party when the news came down?
No, very, very quiet. Not a sound.
Really?
You could hear a pin drop. Well, we weren't interested in partying. We were just interested and was in deep thought of, okay, now what? And there was some talk that they were going to send us to the Pacific. And we didn't care much for that, but you had to go where you were told. But anyway, fortunately, we didn't have to go to the Pacific. They sent us home.
And what did you do after the war?
Well, I was a carpenter apprentice when I went into the service. And when I came back home, I just took up where I left off.
And so was that your business for the rest of your professional life?
Well, not really. I worked for my father. I learned the business from my father. When I come back home, I went back to work, and only at this point I had enough time in that I was a foreman on one of his crews. And then I believe I was 40 years old when he died. And I took over his business from there, and because my mother was still alive, and I was actually running it for my mother. And then later on, I went into business for myself, and then I stayed in business for a while. I don't remember how long. And then I had the opportunity to go to work for a good-sized outfit and with a pension and so forth. So I took that and closed up my own business.
Sir, what are you most proud of from your service to our country?
Just being a soldier in the 82nd Airborne.
Talk about that a little more. Why was that such an honor for you to be part of the 82nd?
Well, at that point, we were known as the elite division. Every soldier in the 82nd was an excellent soldier. He had to be. A paratrooper never got too much recognition. We were always told that, well, that was what was expected of us. And believe me, it worked, because every one of us were extremely proud of our division, and we still are. And our battle cry was Geronimo, which that was developed years and years ago, and I want to remind you that Sergeant York was a soldier in the 82nd. At that point, they were not airborne, though, obviously. But if somebody sarcastically used to say Geronimo, that was, and they were sarcastic about it, that was fighting talk.
Mr. Banks, I thank you very much for your time today. And most of all, I thank you very, very much for your service to our country. We truly appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Donald Banks is a U.S. Army veteran serving in the 82nd Airborne Division in World War II. I'm Greg Corumbus, and this is Veterans Chronicles. Hi, this is Greg Corumbus, and thanks for listening to Veterans Chronicles, a presentation of the American Veterans Center. For more information, please visit AmericanVeteransCenter.org. You can also follow the American Veterans Center on Facebook, and on Twitter, we're at AVC Update. Subscribe to the American Veterans Center YouTube channel for full oral histories and special features. And of course, please subscribe to the Veterans Chronicles podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again for listening, and please join us next time for Veterans Chronicles.